In America, I was free only in battle, never free to rest. And he who finds no way to rest cannot long survive the battle.
Those are the words of Black writer, thinker, and civil rights advocate James Baldwin, as read by the actor Samuel L. Jackson in the 2016 documentary, I Am Not Your Negro. For a lot of people, those words ring just as true today as when they were written by Baldwin nearly 50 years ago. That includes interdisciplinary artist Rashawn Rucker.
To me, it just kind of hit a chord with me always whenever I saw that quote by him, and it just spoke to me about some of the burdens that we carry as Black people, and especially as a Black man.
Rucker's latest exhibition, Never Free to Rest, opened last week at the University of Michigan's Institute for the Humanities. And it explores the burdens that Black men carry by drawing some unique parallels between their lives and, stay with us on this, a familiar bird. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Rashawn Rucker has spent the past few years thinking about birds, more specifically, pigeons. Their gift of flight, their lower status with respect to human city dwellers, and the odd kinship that he feels with them as a Black man. The idea of using the pigeon as a visual allegory for the experience of Black men came to Rucker shortly after a conversation that he had with fellow Detroit artist Tiff Massey.
We were just talking about works that we wanted to do, future works, and what we were kind of aiming towards, and I was telling her I wanted to do a body of work that spoke specifically to conditioning in Black men in America. And, you know, the one thing of advice she gave me was like, you got to make it kind of unconventional. Don't use the normal tropes. And one day I was walking downtown toward my office, toward the Detroit Free Press, where I was working at the time. And somebody had spilled, it was like popcorn and stuff. And it was like, it was completely covering the span of the sidewalk. And there were pigeons there, and I'm a big guy. I'm like 6'3", I'm 300 pounds, and I'm walking, and like the pigeons wouldn't move. So I kind of swatted them with my foot to kind of edge them off, and they never flew away. They just kind of moved a little bit. I said to myself, like, God, I really hate pigeons. And it was like, ding, ding, ding. And I was like, oh my God, people probably feel that way about us. We're in the way, we're taking up space. We're, you know, supposedly living off scraps and the systems, you know, i.e. welfare, whatever, you know, how low income housing, right? You know, all these different things. And it just began a lot of research on my part, you know, into pigeons and the history of pigeons. And that kind of drove me to do these works that compare and contrast these constructed stereotypes of Black men and, you know, real behaviors of pigeons and the histories behind pigeons.
It's been such a rich vein that you tapped into with this. And really interesting to me, because so often when we use birds as a metaphor for something, there's like a feminine association. I'm thinking of terms like mother hen or bird food or the more derogatory term chicken head. But what was it that you thought was especially resonant when you looked at pigeons or bird life and what Black men go through?
I think it was just kind of learning more and more about pigeons, you know, learning that pigeons aren't native to America, which I thought because I've always seen them here like everybody else. And then like, you come to realize like, wow, somebody brought pigeons here. Like they bought us, and it was around the same time period. And pigeons were used for, you know, sport, you know, for target practice, for easy food supply. You know, it was basically, the relationship was about, you know, what you could get out of the pigeon. And I found that similar relationship with Black people, Black men, thinking about slavery and those type of things, like something that's being used for servitude. And then also the bigger comparison was like, what do you do with something that you no longer want or need? You know, now that you're not eating pigeons or you're not using them for target practice, it's like now they're here and now there's this hatred for them. You know, you go everywhere in New York, there's signs everywhere, don't feed the pigeons, rats with wings. And, you know, it's, you think about that. You think about Frederick Douglass in one of his seminal speeches, you know, what do you do now with the Negro? Now that we're free, we're no longer in servitude. So what purpose do we do now? All of those things kind of spoke to me and spoke to each other about, you know, pigeons and about also, you know, how both have had to adapt. You know, pigeons, you know, wherever they're born, it quickly imprints on them as home. And so they're placed somewhere that becomes home. And then you think about the redlining and all these design spaces for people. And you think about projects and you think about these people and this bird, they both adapt to these places and they become home, whether good or bad.
I want to talk more about the drawings that you created for this show. But before we do that, the focal point of the installation is a collection of clay plates that you had fabricated. And anybody who's ever done any target shooting will recognize these as clay pigeons. They're bright orange. And for those who haven't seen the exhibition or seen much of your work, can you describe the image that you had made on every one of them?
The image is a drawing that I did called They Tried to Clip My Wings. The image is a collage of two prison mugshots or people who are, you know, incarcerated. And we had them, you know, made into plaster molds and to be shaped like the clay pigeons that people use for trap shooting or skeet shooting. And one of the things that made me want to do that was because when I think about the target practice in general and them being called clay pigeons and thinking about the work I was already doing, mostly it was the color. And, you know, the typical color for a clay pigeon is orange and black on the bottom. And in thinking about that, it just made me think about prison suits and my people, you know, orange jumpsuits, black skin, and thinking about all these people who've been, like, thrust into mass incarceration and a number of them unjustly. And sometimes when people come out of there, how they're broken and totally devalued as a person. You know, you come out, you can't vote, you can't do certain things. There might not ever be a job market for you ever. And that was kind of the precipice of it. And the piece is called I Hit More Than I Missed. And you only see the three plates on the wall and the rest of the plates are broken throughout the gallery floor. And the pieces on the wall just speaks to the birds that were able to traverse the obstacles and get away from the system and actually escape.
It's time for a quick break. In a moment, Rashawn tells about the sometimes emotionally taxing process of creating an exhibit centered around the pain of black men. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
There's a video that's part of the installation that shows you taking some of the clay pigeons and breaking them, either by dropping them, striking them with a tool. And the video, it feels kind of important. When you drop the very first one on the ground, I don't know if it was me, but it seemed like you recoiled just a little bit. What was the process like of breaking those clay pigeons to create the rubble that's on the floor of the exhibition?
It was actually pretty traumatic because the sound from the first one that I broke sounded like a gunshot. Super loud, and you can hear it, and you just see the shards flying everywhere, and it made me think of, like, bullet fragments. And the more I broke, the heavier it got, and I remember thinking to myself, like, I don't think I ever want to add onto this or make any more just because I didn't like the trauma-filled reaction I had from it. And it just made me think about people I know who are broken in that way, who never were able to recoup their lives after being incarcerated. And I think about, you know, as a journalist, how media works, how social media works, how the internet works. And it's like I was thinking about that, I said, you know, sometimes we do stories and you might say, you know, David, whoever was arrested for said crime and blah, 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 blah. And it's, you know, you got his mugshot there and, you know, and that's kind of the story. And then 6-7 months later, you know, David goes to trial. He gets off. He's found not guilty. He didn't do it. And then that's never covered. But for life, David is on Google or wherever as somebody who was convicted of said crime. How do you come back from something like that?
You're also a photographer, and I know that that's part of your drawing process. Could you tell us a little bit about the role that photography plays in all the work that you do?
Well, first, it kind of like plays this literal role where I take pictures of subjects, people I know, and people that are going to one day become drawings or printmaking pieces or carvings or whatever. But I think the thing that people don't know is even when I was a photographer and when I would shoot assignments for the Free Press, I was always thinking in my mind, how would I draw this? And so I do the same thing when I'm making the drawing and I'm like, how would I photograph this? Like, what is the composition for this? So they really inform each other because they have the same type of rules. You know, you're thinking about the rule of thirds, you're thinking about light, you're thinking about texture, composition. And so photography plays a tremendous role in the work that I create. You know, whether or not you're seeing a photographic image is steeped deeply in photography.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of the drawings that you created for Never Free to Rest. There's one called Watchers Always Watching, and the drawing is of a pair of binoculars, and you can see it's either a reflection in the big end of the lenses, a black man's face with a pigeon head on top. It was impossible not to think about the really terrible scene from a year or two back when a white woman named Amy Cooper called police. Black man named Christian Cooper, who was bird watching in Central Park. How did the image occur to you as a way of talking about just constant surveillance?
So that image has three things that inspired it. First being the story you just told. The second part of it was just me. I'm always interested in like Audubon and reading about his life and kind of discovering that he might have been a product of a relationship, you know, with a slave. And so just thinking about how the person that kind of created bird watching, you know, might be black or brown and thinking about that. And then the third thing is the image of the person you see in the binoculars is Telvin Wallace, who's a good friend of mine, who's also an artist. And he's in a grad school in New York. And he was telling me about how he parked, you know, about to go into the building for, you know, for college and a painting class, and how plainclothes police just jumped out on him. And he was like, I got snatched out the car. I lost one of my locks. Like, I was getting thrown around. They were screaming and yelling, where are the drugs? Where are the drugs? And he's like, I'm an art student. I'm in grad school. The kind of three are kind of interwoven in that piece. And it's just about that heaviness of like being surveilled all the time. And it's just like, wow, you're just trying to go to school. You're just trying to bird watch in Central Park. You're not bothering anyone, but yet and still there's somebody watching you.
I wanted to ask also about, there's a piece of the installation that involves a cage that you built. And this is the first time you've done something like this, right?
Yeah, I don't really, I've always kind of stuck to printmaking and drawing, but I've noticed in the last few years that more of the concepts that I have tend to lend to sculpture and installation-based works.
What this looks like is it's a cage about the size of a phone booth that is easily recognizable as a pigeon coop. But there's an American flag that is twisted throughout the cage and a perch that's covered with pigeon spikes, which people might recognize. It's something that gets put on building exteriors and signs to keep pigeons off of it. And can you explain how the audio component works in this?
The audio component is, you know, with Juliet, who's a sound artist herself, has termed a coop loop. And it was a recording from a pigeon breeder, and the recording is actual pigeons in a coop in Michigan. And so you get the experience of hearing that as you're taking in a piece called A Perilous Perch. And the title just came from, you know, kind of that, you know, troublesome rest type of synonym, where I wanted to talk about what it was like at times being a black man in America, or just a person of color in America, and how there's these very uncomfortable stations. And, you know, barring the word perilous from the Star Spangled Banner was where I borrowed, you know, I took that word from to have the kind of double meaning with the use of the flag. One of the things I thought about when I was thinking about doing this, and I was like, I want to make it, you know, visually uncomfortable. And that's when I started thinking about how I would go to grocery stores, go to all these different places, buildings, skyscrapers downtown, and you would see these pigeon spikes. They would put them there to make it uncomfortable for a pigeon to perch. And just thinking about how sometimes as people of color, you're moved out of these places and put in those design places that are deemed more accessible for you, and not having that full, you know, bandwidth of America. You know, you never like really get to, in some cases, increase the territory for yourself.
You know, sitting in front of these works in this exhibition, the clay pigeons that are mounted on the wall, it just puts you right in the mind of men as targets. And the pile of shards, the wreckage on the floor, feels so intentionally heavy. I know that you've said this is the last series of works that you're going to do along these lines, in Vain of Birds and Taking Flight. And I just wonder how you're feeling about this, how this cycle and this time of sitting with these images has been, and maybe what you'll take away from it.
I think it's a real heaviness to it, but I think when you do work that like really tries to speak truth to power, there is a heaviness to it. And, you know, it's, I always think of it, it's the cost of doing business. When you're trying to make, you know, work that you want people to see and you want the message to be heard, you know, it's a price to pay, even in my own mental health, you know, in doing it. And I thought about the show this morning, and I'm thinking about, you know, speaking with you, and I'm doing this work and I'm trying to do this. And then at the same time, I'm looking at all of these images from the border, you know, with people from Haiti and the people on horses. And I'm like, you never get a chance to decompress as a person of color. It's always something yet waiting for you. And all you can do is really keep pushing. And I just hope that, like, the work that I've done, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years with this series have, like, really made people think. And I always tell people, when you see it, I want you to think to yourself, am I putting someone in a cage? Am I helping them get out of a cage? Like, what's my responsibility in this whole cycle?
Rashawn Rucker's installation, Never Free to Rest, is on view to the public at the University of Michigan Institute for the Humanities Gallery in Ann Arbor through October 15th, 2021. We'll put a link to story with some of the images from the exhibition in today's show notes. Although, if you can make it, I'd highly recommend going to the gallery in person. Rashawn will be giving a virtual talk about his work this Thursday, September 30th, as part of the Penny Stamp Speaker Series at the U of M. It's going to be easy to get to that whether you're in Ann Arbor or not, since it's online. Check the show notes for that link, too. And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's pod was produced by April Van Buren with help from Aaron Allen. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening. See you tomorrow.